Mark Steiner. Welcome back. I hope you enjoy our new theme music as well here in the mornings. Before we jump into our conversation, I'll remind you here you are listening to the Mark Steiner Show. It is 10 a.m. We have a brand new lineup here on WEAA, starting off with the Baltimore Blend at 6 o'clock, going to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now at 8. We're on at 9 to 11 a.m. Following us is the great Michelle Martin. And tell me more with her new national show coming. Her national show coming back to WEA at 11 a.m. And then Sandy Mallory, she's not going anywhere. She's on at noon, and she'll be with you during the lunch hour. So all that coming up before you get to Baseman. And at 5 o'clock comes Anthony McCarthy in my old time slot, and it's his time slot now, starting today. So on the Widow Conversation, I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information, www.mecu.com. And also, please join us this Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. here at WEA Studios. Anthony McCarthy, Michelle Martin, and I will all be here welcoming you in our new lineup for a great afternoon of conversations. So please join us here this Thursday, open to the public. Okay. Let me introduce you now, Anthony Brown, who is Lieutenant Governor of the State of Maryland and a newly declared gubernatorial candidate for the next election coming up in 2014. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. It's great to be on. I remember the first time I was on the show was when we announced that I would be running for lieutenant governor back in November, December of 2005.
So now, as I said to you as you walk through the door, and folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. Tweet us over at Mark Steiner. Jump on Facebook. We have a couple of questions there. I'll go back to Facebook and check them in a moment. But as lieutenant governor, you're bucking the trend. Every lieutenant governor who's attempted to make this move from Mickey Steinberg on has not made it when they ran for governor.
You know, Mark, two out of every three Marylanders know who their lieutenant governor is today. That's probably not been the case in the past in Maryland. And I owe a lot of that to, quite frankly, the partnership, the relationship I've had with Governor Martin O'Malley, where he has given me extraordinary opportunity, a tremendous portfolio to make a difference in the lives of Marylanders. I've led the state's efforts in health care and implementing President Obama's Affordable Care Act. I have had the privilege working with county officials and state officials and communities across Maryland as we welcomed the BRAC jobs that, you know, in 06 and 07, the work that my office has done for veterans in the area of domestic violence, and really just a tremendous opportunity to make a difference. So I think what Marylanders are looking for, they're looking for a leader who is going to get results. A leader who's going to stand up, sacrifice their own self-interest, do what's right for the community, and record means a lot. So as lieutenant governor, I think we've been able to establish a good record of accomplishment on behalf of the people of Maryland.
So, Lieutenant Governor, let me ask you this, a couple of things. This is a very broad, this is a kind of a just an inquiry, not about politics directly, and then we can right back to the political issues that we're facing here in Maryland. But you're in the reserve. You're now a colonel in the reserve, right?
That's right. I've got 28, almost 29 years now in active and reserve Army duty.
So, and you were called up and went to Iraq, so you had to drop out of the state legislature when you were a delegate.
Right. In 2004, I was deployed as a reservist to Iraq for a year, and I actually didn't drop out of the legislature. I just leave of absence.
But supposing as colonel and you're governor, and they do a call-up, does that mean you have to leave, walk away as governor if you were called up?
Yeah, so to clarify, and it's a good question, I am now approaching my 29th year in uniform. And when I reach my 30th year, the 30th anniversary, I reach what they call the mandatory removal date, mandatory retirement date. And that happens to be on July 1st of 2014, about a week after I win the Democratic primary. So the chances of the next governor going to Iraq or Afghanistan or deploying anywhere doesn't exist when it comes to Anthony Brown.
410-319-8888. It's your chance here to ask Lieutenant Governor any question you'd like. We have questions coming in on our Facebook page. And you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, call us at 410-319-8888, write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, and our producers will be checking our Steiner Show inbox. So please join us here any way that's more convenient for you, especially if you're at work, 410-319-8888. Nicolene Smits writes in on Facebook, wants to know, has Howard County Executive Ken Ullman made a decision about joining the Brown ticket yet? And is that happening? Those rumors are everywhere.
Right. Well, let me start by saying that Ken Ullman has been an extraordinary county executive. I mean, the work that he's done in Healthy Howard, the work that they've been able to do in terms of balancing economic growth with preserving a lot of their open space and rural legacy. He's well-liked among his peers. So Ken's he's been a good public servant. In terms of the lieutenant governor, let me just sort of leave it at this. I mean, you know, we're in a process, and just as Governor O'Malley and I announced our ticket early back in 2006, I anticipate announcing a ticket early. There are a lot of great folks out there who I certainly would like to run with or could see myself running with. I'm first and foremost is someone whom I can govern with, someone who's committed to public service, wants to make a difference, and that's what I'm looking for.
So are you in active conversations, though, with County Executive Ullman? Or is he, because he's also talking about running for governor.
Mark, and he is running for governor, and he's been out there on the stump. I've seen him. So, look, we're talking to a number of people. We really are. We want to make sure that we do our due diligence. But right now our focus is more on reaching out to Marylanders in communities across the state. So we had an exciting launch this weekend, started in Prince George's County, about 2,000 people. We were in Frederick and Silver Spring and finished with Governor O'Malley in Baltimore City. And what my priority is to be in a conversation with Marylanders. What are their dreams and aspirations, challenges and concerns? And as I do that, I know that what Marylanders are focused on are what are the opportunities that we are creating in Maryland for more Marylanders.
So I do want to get to the phones here, and I there are a lot of things you've talked about in the last few days. And some people argue that one of the ways you're going to have to win is to kind of distance yourself from Martin O'Malley, come up with your own kind of thoughts and ideas. People say, is this just going to be a continuation of Governor O'Malley's 8 years?
Look, I think for radio commentators and for political scientists, where we're always in the business of distinguishing and differentiating, I think for Marylanders, the question is, what's next? We've enjoyed considerable successes in the state. We've built the best schools in the nation. We've driven down crime to historic levels. We have expanded health care to 365,000 Marylanders that didn't have access to it 6 years ago, half of them children. We've led we are leading most states, I should say, in creating jobs and certainly outpacing Virginia. Having said all that, the question is, what's next? How do you build on those successes, and how do you make sure that we don't just say that we have the best schools, but that every child, whether they're educated in Baltimore City or Bethesda, has access or gets a world-class education?
So how do you get there? Then let me ask this education question. We'll go right to the phones. I'll come back to other questions I have about prisons and your private-public partnerships you've been talking about that I want to get to. But how do you get there? I mean, Baltimore City, we had a discussion this whole last hour about what comes next after Dr. Andres Alonso. People are saying that the Montgomery County School Superintendent has said that he's going to stop testing for a while because he said that's not working. And then people are saying standardized testing is the wrong way to go, that we need to funnel. Some people argue, not on the conservative side, but on the other side, argue you need to put more money into urban and poor schools because you have taken into account how poverty affects education. So what will stand out about your administration when it comes to education?
First of all, it starts education. The investment in education starts with early childhood education. It includes a highly qualified teacher in every classroom, providing our students with the best technologies and material, and strengthening our low-performing schools wherever they exist. We've got to make college more affordable, invest more in career technology education. And let me just stop on that CTE point because, you know, we talk a lot about college preparedness, and that's important. And we look at increases, improvements in MSAs and SATs and advanced placement, and we talk a lot about STEM. But we always also have to remember that we have a responsibility to prepare all of our students for the workforce, even those that may not be going on immediately after high school to seek a four-year college degree. And I think the emphasis needs to be on career technology education, giving students those skills that they can then compete for a job, a good-paying job that'll support a family.
Because every child is not bound for college.
That's
right.
Should they be? 35% of the jobs that will be created in Maryland over the next 5 to 10 years will not require a four-year college degree.
410-319-8888. Yvonne, you're on the air. Hi, Yvonne. Welcome. You're on the air. Yvonne, you there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that I'm glad to hear that the lieutenant governor will be running for governor of Maryland. However, I'm curious as to why he is not considering continuing his journey with Martin O'Malley as far as going to the White House as the vice president.
Yvonne, thank you very much for your confidence in me. You caught me a little off guard here. Look, I've been fortunate enough to serve with, I believe, one of the greatest governors in the history of the state and certainly in the country. And the governor's given me the opportunity to lead our state in the area of healthcare and higher education, in economic development. And I think, you know, Marylanders are now asking, what's the next step? How do you build on these successes? So I'm going to do that. I'm going to encourage Martin O'Malley to continue his public service to the people of Maryland and the people of this country. And in the meantime, I'll work with you and our neighbors here in Maryland to make Maryland better and to make Maryland better for more Marylanders.
We're here with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, who's declared his candidacy for governor in the election of 2014. 410-319-8888 number. Join us here on Facebook, at Mark Steiner, if you want to Twitter. And Melvin, you're on the air. Hi, Melvin. Yes, welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry. It's morning.
It is morning. Yes.
Good morning, Melvin.
I work too much. That's why. I just wanted to, first of all, I want to thank the WEAA staff, and I'd like to thank the Lieutenant Governor for doing a great job in the state of Maryland, and we appreciate your service you're providing to our citizens of Maryland. I know for a fact that it's a lot of people that's out here suffering right now who quite don't know how much success that we've had in the state of Maryland, because they are living their own realities, and their own realities basically is dire straits. How can we start funneling a lot of this money that we are actually recycling from the casinos back into what I consider as the education base, so we would be able to off-stem some of this, these jail cells and some of this, a lot of this incarceration that we go have going on in the state of Maryland. I know it comes directly from education, so wanted to know what we're going to be doing with all this money we're generating from the casinos.
Sure.
Good question, Melvin.
Thanks, Melvin.
Lieutenant Governor.
And Melvin, you know, I think I certainly recognize, as do you and others, that, you know, far too many Marylanders, despite how Maryland's economy is recovering faster than most states, far too many Marylanders continue to look for full-time employment. They continue to struggle with foreclosures. For far too many businesses in Maryland, they're continuing to recover from the blow dealt by the national recession. So I think that our work really begins by ensuring economic prosperity for more Marylanders, which means creating jobs in Maryland, developing Maryland's business community, building the most competitive workforce, and we'll do that in order to grow our economy. The gaming venues in Maryland, they're large employers. They're large revenue generators for the state. In the state of Maryland, and we heard a lot about this back in November during the election, Maryland receives one of the highest percentages from the profits in gaming that go to our state budget. And by means of a formula and a fund that we've established, a very high percentage of that goes to education. If we are going to ensure economic prosperity for more Marylanders, we need to equip more Marylanders to compete and succeed in today's economy. And again, that comes back to education, and that's why a big percentage of those gaming dollars goes in to education. I think I should also add that it's important that we encourage the gaming operators to hire locally, both in the construction of these sites. We've got a new one that will be coming online in Baltimore City, another one in Prince George's County, local hiring both in construction and in the men and women that will be the full-time employees at those sites when they're fully operational.
So we have some questions coming in from Facebook. Hassan, you're the next caller up. We're going to come to your question in just a minute. Let me throw a question of mine, and then we'll go to Hassan and Meredith Moyes' Facebook question. So one of the issues facing Maryland right now that Governor Martin O'Malley has talked about is what happened in the Baltimore City Detention Center with the Black Rural Family and the indictment of a couple of members of the BGF as well as 13 correctional officers. And let me just ask you your commentary on what you think is going on and how to address it. Some people are kind of, and this is my little editorial here on it, and you can comment the way you want, is that people are looking at this as, you know, it's a question of cell phones, it's a question of greater security. But some people would argue that neither the governor's response nor the conservative Republicans' response demanding a greater oversight and for Martin O'Malley to answer questions are even getting near the mark. The question is, some people would argue, is we're incarcerating too many people. You cannot manage this prison system when you have the over-incarceration of mostly men of color in our state, and that is at the heart of the problem, and we have to reform our criminal justice system to not lock up as many people and put them away, especially nonviolent offenders. And that if you couple that with the economy taking away, you know, farms and steel factories and coal mines, then people are forced into jobs that they don't want to take, which is being correctional officers. So if I don't know if you agree or disagree with that kind of perfect storm, but if you do or don't, please talk about it.
No, Mark, I certainly agree with you. I think that the best thing we can do to reform the criminal justice system is to reduce the volume of mostly men, mostly African-American men, who are going into that system.
How would you do that?
I would do that by ensuring opportunities are available. I agree with President Obama when he says that we need to build new ladders of opportunity for people who are willing to work hard and climb those ladders into good jobs. It begins with education. It begins by taking our inmate population and looking at that population more as an extension of the workforce than as a group of outcasts. You look at them as an extension of the workforce, and you make sure that we are providing the necessary drug and alcohol addiction treatment and services. We've done a lot of that under the O'Malley administration. We need to continue doing that. You look at that population and you say, how do we continue reducing recidivism? Because we are in Maryland. How do we accelerate that? You've got to give them the skills training, both soft skills or essential skills, as well as the skills that will allow them to compete for jobs when they come out so that they're not revolving back in to the system. So sure, on the front end, more opportunities through education for those that are in, reduce recidivism by treating addictions, by providing skills training. But let me, if I can, speak to the Baltimore City Detention Center. And, you know, Secretary Maynard several months ago asked the FBI and other agencies to assist in an investigation. And I won't speak to the investigation because it's ongoing. But certainly what we ought to be focusing on, and not something that we should start focusing on now, we have been, but we need to redouble our efforts, is looking at personnel management in our detention centers and correctional facilities, in the screening and hiring and the supervising and, when necessary, firing of personnel that aren't playing by the rules. And we've seen a number of them here at the Baltimore City Detention Center. And we also have to improve the safety, addressing gang activity, and also having the legislature support us in our efforts to make it more difficult and really to just close the door on contraband, including cell phones, coming into the detention center. So really it's about personnel management. It's about safety and security in the institution. It's about reducing recidivism. And that's for the population. And that's after we've addressed the issue that you first raised, which is how do you reduce the volume of men coming into the system?
I have a more question about that, but in fairness to our listeners, let me go to their questions of 410-319-8888. And Hassan, you're on the air. Hassan, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Very well. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I want to definitely say to Lieutenant Governor, thanks for not only your service here, but across seas and what you've done defending the honor of American citizens and lives. I was at the event in Baltimore Saturday. Awesome thing, the cover for DMV Daily. But there was one question that I guess persists amongst the African American community, and we saw the rights of gays and being married and of Latinos, but blacks still feel that their number one issue is HBCUs. And I know I covered the HBCU rally in Annapolis. You were there. However, the O'Malley administration has been fighting tooth and nail in the courts against the lawsuit, and in the Black Caucus's number one issue of the funding that they tried to get this year was not passed. And so the question is, if you become governor, will you settle that lawsuit in favor of the HBCUs and add and give the HBCUs the $14 million a year for 5 years that the Black Caucus was asking for this year?
Hassan, thanks for the question. I certainly don't think that we should be establishing policy and demonstrating our commitment through HBCUs through litigation. So I would certainly do everything I can do to get away from litigation and get the issue, which is the support to the HBCU, squarely in front of the governor, the General Assembly. As you mentioned, Hassan, I did stand with the members of the Maryland Legislative Black Caucus in support of our HBCUs. I will also point out that in the governor's budget, we do have increased funding this year to the HBCUs and to assist them in reducing the number of part-time faculty and to assist also in terms of student retention. But what we need to do is to demonstrate that commitment to the HBCUs, which means increased funding in our budget as we are increasing funding to higher education, but also taking into account the decades of neglect that the HBCUs have experienced. So many people, there are disagreements and differing opinions on how you value that, what the right dollar amount is, and I think that's what the litigation is caught up in. I'd like to look prospectively into the future. What do we need to do to strengthen our HBCUs?
So let's say this was the future, and you let's say for argument's sake you are governor, and this let's say this argument was taking place. The argument was taking place then. Was taking place under your watch as governor. What would you do? What would you say? What would your stand be?
My stand would be, let's ensure that the HBCUs have parity when it comes to facilities, the best labs, the best libraries, the best technologies. I would say let's make sure that the HBCUs have the same ratio of faculty to students, the same support services that are available to students. So this way we can ensure that the retention rate and the college completion rate at our HBCUs is the same as it is at our other institutions. So I would be looking a lot at what are the resources that we're providing and what are the outcomes that we're getting.
So, it's a question from Meredith Moyes. I want to come back to another question. If we have time here, we should. This is Meredith Moyes writes in a question for Lieutenant Governor. Thanks for your support on renewable energy, especially the wind bill. What are some of the specific ways you will address climate change and pollution in rural and urban areas if you're elected governor?
Great. Thank you, Meredith. Climate change is certainly in need of a national policy, but short of that, I think every state, and Maryland included, ought to be looking at what our policies are in terms of environmental conservation and energy use. Some of the things that I would be that I would include in my policy umbrella on the environment and energy is to reduce energy consumption and our carbon footprint by encouraging more renewables and also by encouraging less consumption. You can work with the regulated utilities to do that. You can start at home with Maryland state buildings and retrofit those to better LEED standards to reduce the carbon footprint. I think the approach also has to include bringing all stakeholders in. So, example, not only working with environmentalists, but also with the farming community, and to reduce pollution into the bay by increasing our cover crop program, less pollutants from farms into the bay, by continuing to invest in program open space, so that we can encourage the development that does happen in Maryland to happen in our priority funding areas, our smart growth areas, our transit-oriented development. I mean, there's a long list of things that we ought to be doing and can do in order to do our part to address climate change.
410-319-8888. We have a few minutes here with the Lieutenant Governor. We'll bring him back, of course, during the course of this campaign trail on the campaign trail to hear his thoughts and get your questions out there. But before we have to roll, let me just come back to some of the stuff we were talking about earlier. Not come back, but move to a new area. You talk about public-private partnerships. Every state in the nation is strapped for money. Every city is strapped for money. We can go into a whole deeper discussion about that another day, which we do on this show. But you talk about public-private partnerships, and when people hear that, the question is, does that mean, let's say, in transportation, how does that work out with a private partnership? Does that mean they call the shots about where we're going to put the stops, call the shots about what's going to be built? What do you mean by a public-private partnership?
Sure. Let me start by saying that if we're going to strengthen our economy, we have to invest in infrastructure. We have to modernize our infrastructure.
Right.
And we are limited in terms of public resources. But on the other hand, public-private partnerships is not the solution either. It's a combination. By public-private partnerships, we mean that the private sector will partner with the public sector, in this case, state government, where we would attract the private sector not only to invest dollars, but to bring private sector ingenuity and problem solving through experiences perhaps in other states to address our infrastructure challenges. And I'll give you an example of a great public-private partnership in the state of Maryland, which has proven to be a national model, and that's at the Port of Baltimore. We attracted a private company to invest $140 million in the Port of Baltimore. We didn't have $140 million to invest, but we knew we needed to invest in the port in order to expand it as the Panama Canal is widening and larger ships are coming through. We need an expanded port. We're creating 5,300 jobs, about half of them in the construction for the expansion, and half of them will be long-term in the operation of the port, so that this Port of Baltimore will continue to be an economic engine for the state of Maryland. Maryland State continues to own the port. We continue to have a tremendous amount of say in what will and will not happen at the port. But we're now doing it in partnership with a private company that will share in the risks and also in the return from increased cargo and both passenger and cargo traffic moving through the port. That's what we mean by public-private partnership. We don't mean giving up or selling state assets. We mean inviting the private sector to come in, to invest, to help operate, while we in the state maintain ownership and control of the asset.
Now, we only have about a minute left here. I think you answered this question. A listener just wrote in by email, and she wants to know about how passionate you are about and what you intend to do about early childhood education, which you mentioned. This comes in from Ruth Eddy Shita.
Ruth, thanks. Look, early education is demonstrated to be a very effective way to prepare our children to be ready when they enter kindergarten. And we know that children that start kindergarten ready to learn are going to do much better through the elementary school, which means they'll do better in middle and high school and much more likely to succeed in life. So we need to continue looking at ways to invest more in early childhood education, particularly for those families that don't have the same resources and options to do it themselves.
Lieutenant Governor, I think we've run out of time. I know you've got a roll, and we'll have you back here soon.
I hope so, Mark. Time flies.
It always does when you're having fun. Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown has been with us, who is running for governor now, made his announcements last week. Join us here in the studio here at a new time, the Mark Steiner Show in the morning, 9 to 11 a.m. We're here at 10:30 now. We're going to take a brief break and come back, and we're going to be joined by two women talking about domestic violence, but we're especially interested in looking at domestic violence as it in regards to what happened in Cleveland. Do we not take it seriously enough when we call in domestic violence cases from the police? Some people argue that we could have stopped what happened in Cleveland earlier had we taking it more seriously, but do we not take domestic violence seriously enough? We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews, moving talk radio in a new direction.